two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, are you ready to add a sprinkle of joy to your day? Then you need to check out Add to Cart. Hi, I'm Sujan Pak.
And I'm Kulap Vilaysack. We're your hosts, and on this show, we talk about the things we buy, the things we buy into, and what it says about who we are.
That's right. Each week, we're going to have some honest and maybe, you know, a little TMI conversations about all the fabulous, weird, wonderful things we're adding to or ditching from our carts. You know, we talk about beauty products, latest health trends, philosophies we're passionate about. Nothing is off limits on this podcast.
We're diving deep into everything we and our guests buy into and exploring what it reveals about who we truly are. We're going to decide what's worth the investment, be it money or emotions.
Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes out on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Can you see and hear what is going on behind me? The Giants are taking batting practice. You know what? This is as close as I've been to the players in more than a year. There is excitement inside the ballpark because baseball, as we remember, is back. That's right. Now, of course, the Giants have opened the season on the road and have already played 6 games. But for the first time since 2019, fans will be back in the stands and the Giants will be hearing the roar of that hometown crowd at Oracle Park. Now, the Giants' home opener against the Rockies signals a sign of normalcy in Major League Baseball, at least here in San Francisco. But for fans attending the game, it will be a little bit different. Now, this is video provided by the Giants. Only about 9,000 fans will be allowed inside the ballpark. Anyone 12 and older attending the game has to show proof of being fully vaccinated or a negative COVID-19 test. Fans will be seated in pods, socially distanced throughout the ballpark.
Welcome to In the Bubble. I'm Dr. Bob Wachter. That was sportscaster Anthony Flores, and yes, in fact, baseball is back. It's much more normal than last year, no more cardboard people in the stands, but as you'll hear, at least here in San Francisco, it's not quite back to normal. We wanted to talk about sports. We haven't done that for about 6 months, and I thought it'd be great to call in an old friend, Larry Baer, who's the president and CEO of the San Francisco Giants, one of the great franchises in Major League Baseball. I grew up taking the Long Island Railroad and subway to Shea Stadium to watch the New York Mets and had a chance to relive that when my older son fell in love with baseball, the first time he saw a game at the old Candlestick Park. And then he spent much of his time in high school taking the Muni to sit in the bleachers, cheering on Barry Bonds and company and watching the Giants win a few World Series. He, in fact, went on to a career in baseball, so baseball is very near and dear to me, and as it is to so many Americans, that's really the quintessential American sport. Because of that, seeing it go away in early 2020 was painful, and seeing it come back in late summer, even this in that diminished form with the cardboard people, was important on our path to recovery. And seeing it back this year with crowds, even in many places, smaller crowds, is really terrific. So the Giants have had to grapple with COVID all the way along, whether they could stage baseball at all, what the economics of playing baseball with no crowds or very small crowds were, whether to require vaccination or testing, all those things have been key issues for Major League Baseball and for each of the teams. And we thought it'd be great to talk to Larry Baer about the decisions that his team, the San Francisco Giants, and Major League Baseball in general have made so that we could, in fact, play ball this year. So with that, let us call up Larry Baer. All right. Ready to go?
Ready to go.
Fantastic. Well, first of all, Larry, thank you for coming on. You're in first place. Congratulations.
You know, it's funny. I will give you our breakdown of a baseball season for any folks that are interested. And that is 162 games, first 50 games, see what you've got. Next 50 games, do something about it, because that comes up upon the trade deadline. And then the last 62 games, play like heck. So right. That gets you to 162. So we're obviously feel good that we're off to a good start, and we just have to keep monitoring and tweaking, and let's see where we end up.
Yeah, well, you got something. We're going to talk about COVID mostly. So let's talk about 2020 first. What were the biggest and hardest decisions you guys had to make in 2020 about COVID?
Well, in 2020, we really had to, as a team and then a league. And, the first thing I should say about it is we operate as a collective, right? There are 30 clubs within the league. So clubs can't independently do what they might want to do necessarily without the authorization of the league. So the league made, the overall overarching calls in terms of, when games are played, when they can't be played, et cetera. But within that, each club had to, within its own jurisdiction, come up with a set of rules that would overlay upon MLB, Major League Baseball. So without getting into all the complications, just the general take on 2020 is that while it was a shortened season, I felt that Major League Baseball and the clubs, really were able to operate responsibly, meaning a short season, no fans, except in the very end at the postseason in Texas, but no fans in the 162 game regular season. The season it turned out to be only 60 games. So the 162 games was converted to 60 games. And I believe that, that while there were a couple of team outbreaks that had games canceled, we got all 60 games in and kept everybody safe. So in the teeth of the pandemic, I think we did about as well as we could. And we provided entertainment through television and radio to the fans that I hopefully provided a sense of solace and calm and enjoyment in a very tough time.
Definitely, definitely was. How close was it to there being no season last year? Was that, and how contentious were the internal debates about that?
Well, there were a couple things. One is that, the commissioner had to make a call on whether we could have any type of legitimate season. So 10 games wouldn't be legitimate, right? 60 games felt like it was a legitimate competition because all the 60 games were essentially within your own region to minimize travel. So there were several concerns. The number one concern obviously was, can you keep the players and the associated essential personnel safe? So myself as the CEO of the team, I didn't need to be there to play the games, and I went very rarely. But a trainer had to be there, and the players, of course, had to be there, and the coaches, of course, had to be there, and the people that prepare the ballpark to be used, the ground crew, et cetera, had to be there. Can you keep all of them safe? And I really felt that it was an amazing collective effort to do that. Can you change the protocols so that we couldn't have players eating in the clubhouse? So could you have a outdoor eating facilities? These are just some examples. Mm-hmm. Could you have, instead of the indoor batting cage, could you convert that? So we converted a parking lot to an indoor batting cage. We converted plazas, because there were no fans, to outdoor eating areas for both the home and visiting team. So some very creative solutions, depending on the ballpark footprint, were created to keep everybody safe and to get a really, legitimate 60-game season in. How close did we get? I think, everybody was nervous when St. Louis Cardinals, Miami Marlins were a couple of clubs that had outbreaks and had to cancel, many games in a row. We had ended up canceling two games because of COVID in San Diego, which for something, it turned out to be a false positive with one of the players. I also have to say, Bob, that the testing, and I know you've been talking a lot about testing throughout this whole pandemic, the testing evolved over time, but the fact that we were able to get tests done from players, pretty much on a daily basis was quite amazing. And that contributed to the comfort level.
What are the economics of baseball like when you're playing to stands filled with cardboard people?
Yeah. So, the other piece of this was we had to absorb, brutal economics. basically, and each team is a slightly different, but not huge differences. So I'd say each team depends on fan revenue, anywhere from 40 to 50% of their overall economics. And that would include derivatives of fan revenue, like, you know, ticket revenue, derivatives from addition of tickets would be concessions, merchandise, parking, et cetera. So call it for us, in our case, call it 50%. So half of your revenue is gone. Then other pieces of revenue are limited, right? Like sponsors are saying, I put my sign in an empty ballpark. It gets seen on television, but it doesn't really get, you know, noticed by anybody in the ballpark. So what is that worth to me? And tell all the television games that were canceled, you know, 2/3 of the season was canceled. So look, we all took financial hits, but at least the Giants, and I think many clubs were like this, we weren't going to bemoan our losses, financial losses, because that's, you know, there are a lot of people hurt a lot worse from the pandemic than a Major League Baseball club. And as people were ill and people caring for those who are ill, were ill, the last thing we wanted to do was to have the team ownership and team executives complain about it. So, you know, we took on the losses, and we'll have more losses this year because, again, it's very, you know, limited. We have, right now, we're at about 20 to 25% capacity. But we're looking to a day where, you know, in 2022, at least, we can return to full capacity, if not before.
Yeah. All right, so let's move to 2021. How is it different this year, and what were the biggest and hardest decisions you had to make about staging baseball in 2021?
So it's been really a pretty amazing effort where we've had a collaborative work with, and this was the five California teams. So Dodgers, Angels, Padres in Southern California, Giants and A's in Northern California worked together with the governor's office and the state health director, Dr. Golley and his staff to determine, you know, how to open safely. And, you know, the good news is we were able to open with fans on opening day, but, you know, and what are the right protocols? And then on top of that, each local jurisdiction could layer additional requirements, restrictions. And so, you know, I feel it was a collaborative process that allowed, you know, us to bring fans in safely, make sure that the fan interaction was in such a way that didn't jeopardize the players, because in our ballpark, where you're very close to the field, literally, you can, in some parts of the ballpark, you reach out and even touch the player. Mm-hmm. So how would that all work? So where we ended up was at the state level, having these requirements that were tied to the tiering. So we were essentially have been, and now we're in yellow tier, but have been somewhere between 20% and 50% capacity, but requiring evidence of a negative test or being fully vaccinated, and also living in a socially distanced seating bowl, except for about 1 week ago in early May, we were able to convert to some vaccinated section. So we have now two opportunities for fans, two choices. One is you can sit socially distanced, 6 feet apart in pods of 2 and 4, and you can either have a negative test or be vaccinated, or in an all vaccinated section, if you're comfortable with that, you can sit next to each other with no social distance. So it sounds complicated, but our fans are understanding and adjusting, and we'll be able to build up. So what does that translate into real people? We've had about 7,000 or so in the first couple of home stands capacity. And then this last weekend, we got it up to 10,000. And now with more people vaccinated, essentially, we think that when we play the Dodgers in starting May 21st, we think we can push into a 15,000 to 20,000 because the people will be able to populate the vaccinated sections, which will allow our capacity to grow.
So take us through the logistics. So I come to the stadium, I have my little CDC card, I need to show it to somebody. And if I don't, then you take me off somewhere and you do a test on me. How does that work?
Yes. So, okay, let's do the two. The simplest is if you're vaccinated, you come and you can show your actual card, your old school physical card, or you can show a picture of your card. You have to obviously have ID to show that the card, you know, if it's a mobile phone picture of the card, then you just have to show that you are who you are. You are, you know, Bob Wachter. And then you go into the vaccinated section, you'll get a wristband. And we try to keep the people in the vaccinated section in that general area, you know, for concessions, et cetera. And you'll have a wristband. If you're in a socially distanced seating area, which is pods of 2 and 4, you can have, the way we've been operating is you can be either vaccinated or have a proof of a negative test. Okay. That restriction is still being discussed for the next homestand, whether those restrictions in the socially distanced area where you're 6 feet apart from everyone, that is being reviewed right now. So I don't have an update for you, but that's being reviewed by the city of San Francisco, that restriction. That was a city health director requirement that we've been under, and it's being reviewed.
Okay. So if I don't have my vaccination card, I can show you that I had a test in the last few days. And if I have not had a test in the last few days, but I still want to come in, are you going to test me?
Yes.
And how do you do that?
In a word. And we did, it's a rapid test that it's not something, you know, that's essentially what will happen. And you'll be able, you're not sent home. And if you test negative, then you'll be able to come into the ballpark at your assigned seat.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few, and of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, Season 2 is here. Hosted every week by me, X-Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season 2 of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When you say you're getting 10,000 now, you'd like to and may go up to 15,000. Is that because you're turning a lot of people away, or people are choosing not to come because of the restrictions?
Well, it's really because of the limited capacity. So you see, because we're trying to do the mix between how many seats are socially distanced and how many seats are vaccination section. In the vaccination section seats, you can set it at 100%. So let's say we had 15,000, let's say we had 10,000 seats that were vaccination seats for sale. You could sell all 10,000. In the socially distanced area, you're essentially omitting 75% of the seats from use.
Got it.
So if you had 20,000 seats, right, in the socially distanced section, you're only selling 5,000, right?
Yeah.
So that's why when you watch a game, you see all these holes. So we're trying to get the mix right. And, you know, this is all on a path because, you know, we're following the tiered system. And we're also now following what the governor is saying, that June 15th, you know, things are going to open up. I have to say hats off to all the officials, both state and local, who have, you know, gotten us to the point where we have such low levels in San Francisco. And there's a combination of factors, right, that go into it in terms of hospitalizations and case rates. And also some equity issues as to where the cases are. That's all put into the formula that develops a tier. It's also what the city health officials look at. But, you know, I think if we continue to act responsibly, we're going to get to a point where we'll be able to you know, pull even these restrictions. That's our hope. But we don't want to jump the gun. And we're going to, you know, stick with the guidance of the local health officials who have deserved credit for getting us at very good levels.
Yeah. It must feel a little weird. San Francisco today has a test positivity rate of 0.7%. We're averaging 25 new cases a day in a city of 900,000 people. It must feel a little weird to have the restrictions that you're operating under and then look at other stadiums around the country that are doing worse COVID-wise and yet are fully open. How are you dealing with that?
Yeah, I mean, we had in Texas on opening day while we were, you know, trying to figure out a way to shoehorn our capacity to 7,500 or so. In Texas was 100% capacity, 40,000 people. So different restrictions, different state and local provisions. But again, it's kind of like, you know, bemoaning the financial losses. There has been a lot of pain and suffering. Things are really good now here relatively. And we just think that, like other institutions, restaurants, bars, schools, and especially being outdoors, we think we're on a path that and kind of June 15th has been sort of, it seems to be targeted by everyone, mm-hmm. you know, in the state and you know, hopefully the city needs to review it, that, you know, we get to June 15th and we're going to have a feel pretty good about the world locally. And, you know, and we're certainly open to other provisions, that whether it's masks or whatever, but we really want the fans want to be back. The other thing, we've been doing surveys of fans, and we're finding, just as you would expect, the progression of a comfort from the fans too. And that's one reason the numbers are going to go up too, that, you know, fans looking at buying tickets in May or utilizing their season tickets, more comfortable than April. And what we're hearing from fans in a pretty loud way is they're going to be more comfortable in June than May. The outdoors piece is a huge thing. Once you go to a game, I haven't heard one fan say, oh, you know, I was a little nervous that, you know, the person sitting 6 feet away from me, or even the person sitting next to me, you know, because it's outdoors and it's super open air, and
it is San Francisco, so it is well ventilated. Yeah, there's a lot of
maritime. We have the maritime effect that the maritime air has not knocked down our home run balls, which means mm-hmm. that's a double negative. It means that we've been able to hit some home run balls through that maritime air, so that's good.
Yeah, the decision to have vaccine checking, you know, it was one of the more controversial issues as we've come into 2021, you know, whether colleges, restaurants, travel will require vaccination. How much discussion was there about requiring vaccination, or at least having vaccine-only sections? Did you sort of appreciate that this might be controversial, and how controversial has it been?
Yeah, I mean, I think the vaccine-only sections are interesting because we sort of had to move there in order to get the numbers up to meet the demand, and then let people see. We had a couple of challenges early on. One challenge in the socially distanced seating is that as we're eliminating 75% of the seats, having the 6 foot between pods, we only have seating areas for 2 and 4 people. So what if you have a family of six? What if you have, you know, a neighborhood of 8, 10 people and you traditionally go to a game together? What if you have work associates that, you know, like to travel to games together, 10, 12, you know, you just couldn't do that. So if vaccinated, you have the ability to go in a group. So we almost had to do the vaccinated sections to accommodate people that were larger than two, or groups of larger than 2 and 4. The other thing is, you know, as the research, you're part of this research, shows the safety of vaccinated people around one another, especially outdoors, and especially with masks, right? Because we still have a mask requirement. I mean, you tell me, Bob. You're a lot more qualified, but
I couldn't be safer. Yeah,
I'd like to think that gets down to about zero, right? If you're vaccinated, if you're outdoors, and you have a mask on, you know. And so, I don't think that necessarily on, you know, April 15th, that light bulb was on. But I think on May 15th, that light bulb is on in people's minds. And so vaccinated seats are seeing is really picking up. And so for the Dodgers, May 21st, 22nd, 23rd, you know, for those who might have a larger group, you know, or the price points are a little lower in the vaccinated sections because they're a little further out from home plate, you know, we're seeing people now be more comfortable buying those seats.
Great. Last year, so much of the discussion was protecting the players. You don't hear much about the players. So are you requiring vaccination for the players? Are you still doing testing of the players? What's going on with them?
That's a great question. So the players piece is we cannot require it. The players we have a collective bargaining agreement with the players. And there was one thing I didn't talk about, which was, you know, asked about 2020 and 2021. There was about a 120-page manual, and the manual changed each year on player protocols. And the player protocols, I have to commend the players, because the player protocols were strict. They related to, you know, not going outside on the road, not going outside of your room to socialize or to bars or restaurants, even in areas where bars and restaurants might be open. Like, say, you know, we play in Arizona a lot. We play the Diamondbacks. And so the players have been great that way. And we've, you know, we have one false positive, as I mentioned, but we've basically had no outbreaks with players in season, which is fantastic. And most teams are in that boat. We can't force, we can't compel vaccinations. We strongly encourage vaccinations. We are within a few days of being at 85% vaccinated. And when I say players, it's all the staff that's in and around the dugout, right? So it's players, coaches, manager, trainers, et cetera. At 85%, the protocols loosen. You see players now wearing masks. You can, I think seven teams are at 85%. As I say, we're just a few days away from being at 85%. Then you don't have to wear masks in the dugout. You have on the road, the restrictions are not as severe, right? So you can go to a restaurant or bar consistent with local regulations. Some of the restrictions on eating in the clubhouse are relaxed. So all of that changes when it's 85%, and we're close to being 85%. So the players have incentive to get vaccinated. We're not under the illusion that we'll have 100%. It would be good, but, you know, just like the general, players are a microcosm of society. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get to 100% of society being vaccinated for whatever reasons. But being at 85%, we're really proud of that. I just heard some numbers league-wide. 83%, I think it's about 83% of the players have had at least one shot. Of the players league-wide. So that's really good.
And are you say that when you say players, you're actually talking about a lot of frontline staff. Are the staff being required to vaccinate? Because I assume they're not part of the union.
We are not. We're doing a similar thing. So when you say staff, now we're talking about front office and all. We are not requiring it to come back to work, but we are highly encouraging it. And we'll have, you know, the way we're handling it now is we may have separate protocols for those not vaccinated in terms of, you know, social distancing and all of that. So we'll see. We have not reopened our offices. So that's a decision that is coming. We don't have that decision made yet.
And are you still doing any routine testing of players or staff, or that's all gone away in the world of vaccination?
We're doing routine testing of staff. Right. So if you haven't been vaccinated and you're working in the ballpark, so if you're in concessions and if you're in, you're an usher or security and you have not been vaccinated, you are tested regularly. So we have a program, Bob, and I'm really proud of the group at the Giants. I just want to give them a quick shout out. We mm-hmm. have something called FanSafe, and it's actually a kind of a brand, right? And we have a logo. FanSafe. We put it up in the ballpark. We have on our website what it means at sfgiants.com. And what it means is we take every precaution from the sort of the typical sanitation things to all the way we're presenting food. We initially had remote ordering of food only. Now we have, you can belly up, we call it belly up service. We go to the concession stands. We don't have all the stands open. We have social distancing and lines to get in. We have we ask people to social distance as they leave the ballpark, et cetera. So those are really important features. We're also, you mentioned the workers. One of the things I think the health directors, both locally and statewide, have been focused on, and rightly so, is just, you know, people in the kitchens preparing the food. Mm-hmm. So we've had really stringent measures to make sure that they're vaccinated if possible, tested, separated by distance, because the outbreaks can be there. People just think of the fans, but what about the workers?
Mm-hmm. People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
The team is, you know, they're celebrities. That's an iconic part of the city. Is the team doing anything to try to encourage people to get vaccinated?
Yeah, so a lot. And players have been great. We've done public service announcements with the players, working hard with our sponsors. So if you watch a game on television, right by the first base line, you see a big, two big words painted on this field, vax up, exclamation point. And that's with our partner Dignity Health, which has been our partner. We've distributed masks. We produced with them was 250,000 masks, Giants logoed masks that we've given out, and not just given out to fans coming to games, but also to in the community, and especially in certain low income neighborhoods where players have gone. So players have delivered messages. We've also been really focused on communities that would, you know, separate from baseball, that, you know, with food insecurity and people having real trouble with unemployment and losing their positions. During the pandemic, we had food pantry opened in our parking lot for about 6 months, up to eight months, I think, and delivered 1.6 million meals to folks. And it was just literally a drive-through. So those sorts of things, you know, what the thing about a baseball team or other professional sports teams, but a baseball team especially, I think, because it's a long season, a lot of games, and it's during the summer, is, you know, we have a loud megaphone, a platform. It may not be that large a business, but we have a profile. We're on television 4 hours a day for 7 months, and radio, and social media. So all those messages have gone out. And we also think that players might be able to reach through their messaging a different demographic than if you just put, you know, something on television. There's been a lot of advertising support, but doesn't always reach, say, the younger fan that might be accessing, you know, media differently.
Yeah. Just a couple more, and I know you've got to go.
Sure.
COVID has accelerated trends in a lot of industries, whether it's the way people do work or the digitization of the field. What do you think are going to be the enduring effects of COVID on baseball?
So I think, you know, in a couple of ways, it's been, you know, we've learned to stay connected both on the business side and on the baseball side in ways that have been, you know, you could call them silver linings if you want. I mean, we all wish the pandemic never happened. So start with that. But, you know, we've had let's just talk about the business side first. You know, fans, we've stayed connected with fans in new ways. We've had these chalk talks, these Zoom chalk talks. And we've had everybody from, you know, our Hall of Famers. And, you know, we had a great one because it was Willie Mays' birthday the other day. We had a great one saluting Willie Mays. And we had Barry Bonds come on and Dusty Baker come on. And people that, you know, have very, very connected to Willie and talk about what Willie's meant to them. And thousands of fans were able to get on through Zoom and connect with that. That's probably something that wouldn't have happened in a pre-pandemic world. So the connectedness with our fans, the connectedness with our community. So we've had community leaders come on and meet with members of the Giants organization and also our fans. The connectedness within our front office. So meetings are much more efficient, commute, et cetera. The question that's out there, are we going to 5 days a week work, 4 days, 3 days? You know, we're like other businesses. One big thing is we put on events. So we will have a higher proportion of folks, I think, being in the office or being in and around the office when we come back. On the baseball side, I think we've learned, you know, creative ways to communicate, creative ways to use technology that we've been able to do, believe it or not, you know, sort of technology sessions with our players and with our staff, looking at new devices and new things, you know, remotely that we could impose into our development of players and implement. So those pieces aren't going to go away. I think they're just going to make us more efficient and make the organization better. So those are, you know, again, we wish there was never a pandemic, but there's some takeaways for us that have been, they've been good. I think that the other thing, though, that we're feeling and hearing is nothing replaces being at the ballpark.
Yeah.
So all the remote access to the Giants for the games themselves, there is a roaring 20s kind of feel. I think that people want to be in the ballpark having a hot dog and a beverage. People want to be cheering for the players. And the players, too, you know, it was a hollowed out experience last year having no fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Very empty.
Yeah, maybe that brings me to my last question. As you know, my son works in baseball,
yes.
And he saw Bond's first home run into the Bay when he was, I think, 9 or 10, and his eyes lit up and said, this is what I want to do. It has a special meaning in America. As you've been making your decisions last year and this year, how much was that on your mind, that this is not just a game and not just a business, but there's something iconic about baseball and its place in American culture?
A lot, Bob. And I think it boils down, and this is a really, it's a perfect connection to you and your son. I grew up going to baseball games. Sort of my childhood was defined by, and my relationship with my parents, and especially my dad, who was a big fan, and my mom was very supportive of it, but not as big a fan, where we would get on the bus, the municipal railway bus, growing up in San Francisco, and go out to Candlestick and watch Willie Mays in center field and Bobby Bonds in right field and Juan Marichal pitching and Willie McCovey at first base. That was my childhood. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love the moment, the time that I spent with my father, and the times then ultimately I would spend with my friends going to games. And my favorite thing to do, I mean, I love it when the Giants are in the World Series. I know that that's not going to be every single year. But what gives me the joy, and I think what gives all of us the fulfillment, is to see mothers and sons and fathers and daughters and grandparents having that shared experience. And, you know, couples and brothers and sisters and work associates and people on date night. And it's the communal spirit. And we lost that last year in 2020. And when we lost it, we saw how overwhelmingly powerful it is to have that sense of community, you know, within a ballpark, when you're with your family or friends, or even with strangers. I mean, one of my greatest moments, we have a number of sponsors will give tickets to the Boys and Girls Clubs. And we have something called the Junior Giants program that supports low-income youth. And you see high fives. You might be sitting next to somebody who is 17 years old and lives in Visitation Valley. And you might be an executive in downtown San Francisco, and you know Buster Posey hits a home run, or Johnny Cueto strikes somebody out, and you see them high fiving each other, mm-hmm. complete strangers,
yeah,
from different, very different worlds. That's what is the essence of our game.
Yeah, well, so glad it's back, and glad the Giants are doing well, and thank you for taking the time and talking with us. It's been a fascinating couple of years, and you've managed it incredibly well given all the curveballs.
Well, thank you, Bob. And I have to say that the Wachter threads, Twitter threads, have helped us educate us, the Giants, and educate the community the larger community incredibly well. So thank you for all the contributions of you and everybody on the front lines. Obviously, we would not be in the good momentum position we're in without your incredible work. So thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. We have a number of other great episodes coming up on In the Bubble before we take a little break. We'll do a toolkit on long COVID. We haven't talked about long COVID for a number of months, and there's a lot more experience that we've all gathered, some more research, and I think a little bit better understanding of what's going on. We'll talk to Lakshmi Santosh, who is a pulmonary physician at UCSF and runs our long COVID clinic, as well as NYU's Jennifer Frontera, who's a member of the WHO Brain Health Neurology and COVID-19 Forum, and an expert on some of the neurological manifestations of COVID. We'll also talk to Justin Sutherland, who's a celebrity chef and a restaurant owner, and he's going to talk about another industry that was battered by COVID and is coming back, just like baseball. That's the restaurant industry. And then we'll take a little bit of a break for a few weeks, and then we will retool. Andy Slavitt is going to finish up his White House stint, as was promised in the beginning, and we'll come back to take over hosting the show in mid-June. And I look forward to welcoming Andy back and to regaining my rightful place as a loyal listener to this wonderful show. So until then, you have a few more episodes with me. Please stay safe, get vaccinated, and I look forward to talking to you soon. We're a production of Lemonada Media. Chrissy Pease and Alex McGowan produced our show. Our mix is by Ivan Kuriev. Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax executive produced the show. Our theme was composed by Dan Molad and Oliver Hill, and additional music by Ivan Kuriev. You can find out more about our show on social media at In the Bubble Pod. Until next time, stay safe and stay sane. Thanks so much for listening.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people, and we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Elise Myers. I'm a content creator and comedian. You might know me from TikTok. Why am I in your ears right now? Well, that's a great question. I would love to tell you. I have a new podcast called Funny Because It's True. On my show, I'll be interviewing comedians, pop culture icons, and also just people I find really funny. We'll be talking about the awkward moments that keep you awake at night. Because if you don't laugh, you cry, right? Okay, funny because it's true. Out now wherever you get your podcasts.